Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's 4:08, Jordana Green. Thank you for spending some time with me this afternoon. David Josephson at the helm. Whew, deep breath, folks. We were originally planning on having the Governor Walz press conference at this time. It has been postponed to 5 o'clock. As you know, you can hear all of the latest breaking news, weather, traffic, everything here on WCCO. So we will absolutely keep you posted on that and take it as soon as the governor becomes available. The breaking news, as you know, more charges in the brutal murder of George Floyd. All of the officers are now charged and they are being rounded up as we speak. Minnesota Attorney General says the charges are rooted in facts that we can prove. And we are grateful that those charges have now, albeit late, been filed. I want this place here on the show to be a place where we can talk about hard things, where we can ask hard questions that might be awkward and uncomfortable, but it's only from that place of uncomfortability can we grow and can we learn something. And we can have those moments where we were better than we were before we heard that conversation or before we asked that question. And in that spirit, I have asked two gentlemen to join me on an ongoing basis to lead these conversations, to answer questions, and to come up with ideas about what we should be talking about. They are the co-founders of Top Figure, Abdi Hassan and Salman Elmi. Now, you remember them because they were on the show last week. These are the same two gentlemen who, when in their own gym at their office here in Minneapolis, were approached by a white man and asked if they were supposed to be there and what their office number was. That went viral. They have done global media appearances about it and are more relevant than ever, of course, in the wake of George Floyd, because we are seeing in real time the racism, the systemic racism that exists in our businesses, in our homes, in our lives, in our minds. So Abdi and Salman, I am so happy to have you back on the show. Thanks again for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Thank you for having
us.
We want to call the segment We Belong, because as young entrepreneurs, Abdi and Salman, as black men, often feel that they don't belong. They are given the side eye. They feel like they don't belong in these banking meetings or, you know, at trade shows. And that's what we as Minnesotans want to identify. What are they feeling? What are they hearing? What are they knowing in their heart? And to be a more inclusive humanity, we need them to help educate. But before we get to business and before we talk about the businesses that people of color own on Lake Street and rebounding, I want to ask you both how you really are today. This has been a hard week, and a hard month or so for you guys with this other experience. But how are you feeling today?
We're getting by, you know, we're feeling a little better just because everyone's support, you know. I don't know how we would have felt without the support, you know, just being so many people said, yes, we do belong, you know, yes, we deserve everything. And it's been refreshing, you know, honestly, going through this traumatic experience. Now we're getting, you know, a little bit better.
Good. I'm going to ask that you guys say your name before, because there's two of you. So I want everybody to know who's talking at the time. So just say, hey, it's Abdi, or hey, it's Salman. And when you answer the question, okay?
Yeah, that was Abdi Hassan.
Okay, then you answer the question, Salman. How are you feeling today?
Salman, Elmi. So, yeah, no, just, you know, really, we're getting by. It's just, you know, overwhelming. And, you know, as more reports and more updates come out, you know, we're starting to really, you know, the community is coming together and really, you know, showing support all across the world and locally, too, as well. So, you know, just we're very thankful for this community. And, yeah, so we're getting by.
And the topic we want to discuss today are Black-owned businesses and how they might have an enormous struggle and challenge to rebuild after, you know, we see the devastation that's happened on Lake Street in our communities. And one of you, I know, has a family that started a local a business locally. But that isn't the way that a lot of white-owned businesses start. You know, maybe you go to the bank and you take out a loan or you get some credit and you start a business. So I'm going to just throw it out there. What are some of the challenges that people of color face when they want to start a business?
So, this is Salman Elmi. So, essentially, you know, really crowdsourcing is really the main way for us to go about it. You know, we just, you know, tend to pool our money together. Granted, a lot of times, you know, people of color don't really have the greatest credit scores. And, you know, what ends up happening is when, you know, or the limited, you know, lack of financial literacy in our households, you know, we don't really get taught that credit is very important. So what ends up happening is when we do approach banks and institutions, we tend to get turned away, you know, and so generally what we usually, you know, go towards is, you know, crowdfunding. So we pull money together from friends, family, and relatives, and that's the traditional way that we generally go about starting businesses, you know.
But doesn't that wipe out life savings for most families?
Yeah, it's usually a lot of times the money that there's, you know, that we're working, you know, our jobs and we're putting together, putting that away. And then that's really, it's a lot of times it's the money that we have saved up. And that's where the funding usually comes from. So it's very stressful when certain things like this happen where, you know, we don't have that credit line or we don't have the sort of funding to back us when things like this happen. Because sometimes it's like we're giving it our all. It's all the money that we have saved up. So. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And this is Abdi Hassan. What I want to add on to that is people don't understand how difficult it is to start a business itself. You know, starting the business, it's hard. You know, you're taking a huge risk. And when you have so much other roadblocks come against you just due to your skin color, it's tough. You know, that's why a lot of Black-owned businesses, they don't succeed as much because, number one, they don't get as much support either. Even after they go through all those hurdles and they open up, the support just might not be there, you know, and they might fail within the first 6 months to a year because money isn't coming. Because at the end of the day, a business could not survive without sales, without money. You could have everything going. Unless it's a nonprofit, it can't survive without money, you know, and we need to be supporting these Black-owned businesses and essentially, you know, giving them tools also, you know, resources that they don't have access to. It all comes down to access, what access we don't have. And that's just something that is unfortunate, but we need to make this a change. We got to come together as a community and we need to start helping these Black-owned businesses.
We have to take a break, but what you just said is so interesting because generationally, we often look to our parents or our grandparents or somebody else's parents that may have started a business. And for people that are new to this country or for minorities that didn't have access to capital in the past, they don't have that generational experience of owning a business, so they can't pass it down. So this generation, they're on their own. They have to learn all of it themselves. And we have to take a quick break. We're going to continue the conversation with Abdi Hassan and Salman Elmi, and we can take questions if you have one. But gentlemen, up next, I want to talk about insurance and what is going to happen to the minority-owned businesses that we're seeing in the area that were looted and that were destroyed. That's all next on CCO. Welcome back. It's 4:21. Jordana Green here. We are talking to top figure co-founders Abdi Hassan and Salman Elmi. Now, they are you guys have to describe it better. I think it's a digital marketing agency where you teach people how to sell products and get sales online. Is that right?
Yeah, and we also manage advertising for clients. You know, we pretty much do the media buying side for clients.
Excellent. And how new is your business?
We've been around for 3 years now, so we just went into our third year of business, you know, and it's been for us. Luckily, we started off in the service based industry, so it didn't take up much capital to start. You know, it only took labor and effort and getting our first client. So for us, it was very different than the traditional brick and mortar business, where you have to actually need a lot of upfront capital, you know, and that was the biggest thing for us. And we were blessed and we were able to, you know, work around that.
How's it going 3 years later? You guys making money?
Yes. It's going pretty well. And we've been doing it for a while. It's our passion too. It's our passion, you know. We've always wanted to help companies scale, you know, help companies grow online, and that's the thing. We've just been perfecting our craft, getting better at it every day. You know, there's always, every new level you reach, you're gonna face new obstacles, you're gonna face harder things, you know. But we also don't want to forget about the people who are just starting now or the businesses who don't have these skills. You know, we want to shed light to them. You know, we want to give them resources. We want to help everybody.
And I understand you don't have necessarily a brick and mortar business. You guys work in digital spaces and you have an office, but you help people grow their digital businesses. That's what Top Figure does. So if you have a digital business, you should reach out to these guys. But I wanted to sort of go back. You know, I know you're active, obviously, with what's going on at the George Floyd Memorial. I've been following you guys on Instagram, and people should do that, Top Figure, Team Top Figure. And we were talking earlier today about the businesses that have been decimated on the Lake Street area, 38th in Chicago. And I, you know, we had a conversation. I said, you know, people like me think, okay, well, you have insurance, so you should rebuild. But I had a small business owner call in last week, and he says, I just don't know. I don't know if I can rebuild. I just don't know if I can. So talk to us about that. Talk to us about the challenge a minority-owned business might face after a tragedy like this.
Yeah, this is Abdi Hassan. Well, the biggest part people forget is it's not as easy as just you build it back up and you continue. You know, number one, this thing takes time. Insurance claims take time, you know. And during that time is these people are not making money because this was their income. This was their daily livelihood. Mm-hmm. This was how they made money, right? So another thing people are forgetting is think about the mental trauma that they're going through right now. Your business, your baby that you invested your whole life into just got burned down. So it's not as easy as you turn the switch back on and you're back up running, you know. So it's like they have to go through mental trauma, you know. They need to be thinking, they're even considering, is this even worth it? Am I even gonna make the profits again, you know? And some of these businesses were probably barely just getting by, you know, and this was the thing that threw them over the edge. And we are going to see a lot of them are definitely not going to reopen just because of everything and with how things were, you know. So it's very sad. It's very sad. And, you know, shame on the people that took advantage of this situation and looting and destroying property, trying to just take advantage of, you know, the George Floyd situation. That is not fair, you know, and it's not fair to these business owners, and it's not fair that people did that, you know, taking away the justice that's going to be served, you know.
Salman, did you want to jump in here?
Yeah, so, and then I just want to add, like, you know, really to the insurance policies, a lot of people are quick to say, you know, hey, insurance policies, you know, for these businesses, but a lot of times, like Abdi was saying, like, they're getting by, they're just getting by, like, they have really their, you know, their daily profits are very slim already, as is, like, they're, and a lot of times, you know, they can't afford to have a full premium policy, and, like, they might have had, like, a minimum policy where it only covers a certain portion of the business, so it's, a lot of people are saying that excuse where it's like, hey, a lot of these businesses have insurance policies, but granted, a lot of them really don't have, and, you know, like Abdi said, they take time to make this, and, you know, like, their incomes are completely, you know, lost. So it's sad, and to go to the people who are, you know, like, looting and rioting, like, it's very shameful, and, you know, a lot of the people we're realizing that were looting and rioting weren't from our town. There were people that were, you know, from the Cedar communities, the Somali community. I noticed, like, a lot of the elders and the people were outside protecting these businesses. And like, it was just, you know, because the community isn't here to destroy their own businesses. That's not the point. Like, this is their livelihood. This is their place of, you know, business, you know, so it's just sad. So
it's very sad. So I know you are active in the community, and certainly post George Floyd, in reaching out and helping. You have a great email that you can send to our local law enforcement on your Instagram site at Team Top Figure. How can we, the community at large, best serve business owners that have been affected by this tragedy?
Yeah, I say, this is Salman Elmi again. So I say the best thing that we could do is really to show support, you know, like, to, and give, you know, whether that be through, you know, there are a lot of GoFundMe campaigns that are going around with these businesses. So I would suggest, you know, we're going to post them here on our Instagram, you know, the different GoFundMe. That's how much I have a digital, like, lens at a lot of things.
But yes.
Yeah, GoFundMe campaigns on our Instagram. We'll post those on there of, like, the businesses that are affected on Lake Street. So I would suggest, you know, to donate to them, to these businesses, so they can rebuild. That's one thing. And another thing is to really support the ones that are still, you know, hanging on their last thread. It's like the ones that are still open, the ones that are, you know, just go out and, you know, order takeout or something like that, you know, mm-hmm. and to really support these businesses. So that's what I really would suggest our listeners, you know, I would urge you guys to do that.
Yeah, this is Abdi Hassan, and I want to add on to how important that is that Salman just mentioned. Like, literally just supporting the ones that we have left, the ones that are actually open, like, just showing support. Whether, let's say you might not even, that's not your type of food stuff, just even going there and just buying a meal, you know, that goes a long way. And show support and say, like, we're with you, you know, like, we understand what you're going through. Those encouraging words are so important, and so many people don't understand how big that is, especially when you're considering to shut your doors down because your profit does not make sense. Especially in the restaurant industry, we're very heavily involved in the restaurant industry. We know that they get by with slim profit margins, and yes. If you're not getting the support or if people are not even coming, that means you're barely profitable, you know. So, you know, just actually go out and start supporting these businesses, you know, not just posting about it. Let's start, like, putting money where our mouth is and buying from them, you know, and showing them the support.
I know you guys are working on a documentary about minority-owned businesses. I want you to keep us posted on that. But tell people where they can find you, where they can follow you for now.
Yeah, so all of our socials is at Team Top Figure. And then our email is teamtopfigure@gmail.com. And yeah, you could email us, you could follow us on socials, and that's pretty much where everything's at, Team Top Figure.
All of our conversations won't only be about business. It will be about, you know, being a young Black successful person in the United States and whatever hard conversations you guys feel that we should be having. But Abdi Hassan and Salman Elmi, Team Top Figure co-founders, thank you for the conversation. Thank you for being here, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Thank you. And we're so excited about this new show that we have coming. It's going to be very informational, very, like, you guys are going to find out a lot of things that you did not know. You know, we want to peel the curtain and show you guys exactly what's behind the curtain and what's really been going on in our own backyard that nobody speaks about. So we want to thank Jordana for bringing light to this and having us a part of this. We're very excited.
I got you guys. I got you. Thanks, boys. Thank you. I really appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You got it. I like the way he says, I want to peel the curtain. I want to peel the curtain and I want to show you what's happening in our own backyard. I particularly like that imagery because I think now so many more of us are actually ready to see what is behind that curtain. We may not have wanted to acknowledge it before. We may not have known before. We weren't in a space where we were open to it. But I think we are together, and I'm looking forward to seeing what is behind that curtain. When we return, 651-989-9226, has your small business been impacted by this and by COVID? Tell me how you're doing. What do you need? What's going on? Let's talk next. Welcome back. It's 4:37. Time to open the phone lines. 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. I love hearing from you every day. This is going to be our space because the governor is supposed to have a press conference at 5 o'clock. So no real topic. I mean, we were talking business with Abdi and Salman about how hard it is for minority-owned businesses to come back when a tragedy of any kind strikes. Certainly, you know, the looting or the rioting, that was awful. Takes a toll financially and emotionally. But I just, so this is a space, you don't have to be a small business owner. Just how are you doing? What are you doing? What are you up to today? And how are you dealing with all of this? My phone number is 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. We're going to check in with Sloan Martin in just a few minutes. She is at a protest about accountability and media. So that should be very, very interesting. We're learning today the ACLU has brought a lawsuit against Minnesota for the way that journalists have been treated during this mess, during this past week. So we'll definitely be watching that and keeping an eye on that. And we're going to talk to Sloan in just a moment. 651-989-9226 is my number if you guys want to give a buzz. If not, I totally get it. If you're just feeling a little quiet and you just want to listen, no problem. Something I listened to last night that I thought was eye-opening, gave me a glimpse into a world that, again, has always been in front of us, yet I guess I never really saw. And I am willing to absolutely admit that right now. Commentator, comedian, show host Kamau Bell, W. Kamau Bell, was on Jimmy Fallon last night. And he shared with Jimmy his experience about being a young black man and the time when his mother explained that the world was going to be very different for him.
The big thing I would say is forget the protests. If people have good jobs, they have access to health care, their kids are educated, the criminal justice system is there to protect them and work for them, not be against them, then it's hard for people to break a window. You know what I'm saying? Like, if everybody's happy, you can't go, man, everybody's well-fed and happy. Want to break this window with me? No, I don't want to break this window. I got to be at work in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you remember being taught about racism when you were a kid?
Yeah, I mean, my mom wouldn't have – I don't remember the moment it started because I had a black mom who was like – it was always in the house. It was the wallpaper. It was the artwork. It was Dr. King records. It was always a thing that was around. I used to do a joke in my old act that I was 8 years old before I realized that a cracker was also a delicious snack. But when I was at the age when I was like about to start like going out on my own, like down the street to the like drugstore to buy a candy bar or something, she took me to the drugstore and was like, okay, now that we're in the drugstore, do you see that man who's following us around? I said, yes. She's like, he's the store detective. Everywhere you go in the store, he's going to be looking at you. And my mom was bold. She's literally pointing at the guy, that guy right there who's looking at us. And he just sort of stood there like, what? I just happened to be in the same aisle as you. And, and she was like, so if you come to the store, only pick something up. Don't pick anything up unless you intend to buy it. And if you buy it, hold it out, take it to the front. Don't put it into your pocket. Make sure you know where it is at all times. And that's at like age 10. And that lesson is stuck with me to this day. I literally am in stores aware of where my hands are, what I'm going to touch. And sometimes as I walk out of a store, I will like actually pat myself down to make sure anything get in there. because I'm paranoid.
Yeah, of course.
As a kid, I was afraid of being arrested, but now as an adult, I'm afraid of being murdered, you know?
What is that like when you're growing up and you don't know what's going to happen when you leave the house?
I mean, I think the feeling of it now for young black kids is even more severe than when I had it. Because when I had it, there was not the same fear that you might die, because those stories, while they were out there, they were sort of just out in the wind. You weren't seeing the videos. So like for me at this point, like with my kids, they're mixed, but they're also black because that's how America works. I feel like if I don't prepare them for the fact that the world's not always going to be on their side and sometimes the world might be against them, that's basically like negligence. You know, some people are like, I can't talk to my kids about what's going on in the world right now because I don't want to scare them. And I'm like, yeah, but that's like saying, I can't talk to my kids about not touching fire because fire will scare them. You know, yeah. It's like, you have to, prepare your kids for the realities of the world.
Preparing your kids for the realities of the world. And boy, that story he tells where he's in a store and his mom says, see that guy who's following us around? Yep, that is the store detective and he is waiting for you to swipe something. Like that was a moment that I thought, oh my gosh, I don't think about that when I go into a store. I don't expect somebody to follow me around. Every now and then you always get that, you know, overzealous security rent-a-cop that follows people around, but not in the way that black people are monitored all the time when they go into a store. I know, David, that you have, this really struck you because you actually do this, right? You take things and put them in your pocket, don't you?
Well, yeah, I remember going to a store a few years ago and, you know, in the back of my mind, my mom would always say, you know, you don't put anything in your pockets at the store because you might walk out with it and you don't want to do that. So,
right.
You know, I'm in Menards by my house and I got one more thing than I have hands and I just slipped something in the pocket of my hooded sweatshirt and the first thing I thought was, oh, no, I can't do that. And then I kind of like stopped and looked around and was like, no, like, it's going to be fine. I'm going to put it in my pocket. If no one's going to see, if they did see, I just say, oh, yeah, it's right here. Like, I'm in my, right. You know, like, work clothes. I'm clearly working on a house project. It's a box of 10 penny nails. I'm not going to get arrested for it. And I walk to the, you know, checkout, and I pull my pocket. I pay for them. I go home. And when I heard this story today, I realized that the fact that I have no qualms in doing that, in walking to a store and putting something in my pocket and walking around for another 20 minutes and then going and paying for it. Like, that's part of the privilege I have as a white man on display right there. I never thought about it like that, but there's little things like that that I can do without thinking about that, you know, not everybody in our society can.
But what a moment. You know, he just said it. That's part of the privilege that I never thought about, that other people that are the same as David don't have that privilege because of the color of their skin. And that is powerful. That's powerful that you recognize that. And that's powerful now that everybody who just heard this will now recognize that, hopefully, God willing, with an open mind. Because we don't think about it. I have never had to have that talk with my children other than don't steal anything because, you know, morally you don't steal. You don't put things in your pocket. You don't steal. Of course, everybody knows that, but not because they're going to be watching you extra hard because of the color of your skin. It was an awakening and I'm glad I heard it. I'm glad we acknowledged it and I'm glad we played it for you. And that was Kamau Bell, by the way. He is a show host, a comedian, just a really smart, smart guy. When we get back, Sloan Martin out at a display, a protest. I'm not sure what it's called. Is it? Are they having a march or is it just what is it, like a press conference? What's going on there, David?
That's what we're going to ask Sloan. I think it's a protest.
I don't know. Yeah. That's a protest. Okay. Sloan is out at a protest that involves media. So we're going to hear more about that next. 4:53, Jordana Green here. Sloan Martin is out about on the streets at a protest. Sloan, where are you and what is happening?
Jordana, I am right at WCCO-TV in downtown Minneapolis. So this is 10th and Nicollet Mall, a group of a couple hundred people, maybe a little bit smaller than we've been seeing over the last week. But still, I would say a strong crowd going on day 9 here. And we have talked about throughout this entire week how much the focus is, of course, on justice for George Floyd, but also on addressing institutions and really questioning them, whether it's police or, in this case, being out in front of the TV station, media. And I'm hearing from people, from protesters, from activists who are speaking that there needs to be changes from top to bottom. I'm reading from their demands, and this is what I'm hearing from them, to eliminating pro-police and racially biased news culture, cultural competency training for staff, journalists, and producers, also hiring and the promotion of black journalists and news executives. And Jordana, it's another one of those things where we have to listen, you know, especially us in media. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any denying that there is a lack of diversity in voices when it takes years to get, you know, a decent living, when it takes unpaid internships in order to get those opportunities. So it's a very difficult business to be able to break into, and that can eliminate people who maybe have voices that we need to be hearing. So that's a big focus of today as well, but also them criticizing basically relationships with police and how there is a dependency on information from them that they think really does not serve the Black community.
Yeah, I think they're right. I think they do need a greater visibility on the air, and television and radio, and newspaper as well. I think they need greater visibility in management. And I do think we need to talk to them about what are the top, you know, what do we want to, what are, should we be talking about on the air? What conversations should we be having? Because if you only have white people on the air, you only talk about what white people talk about. So I think this is overdue.
Well, that is the thing. It's like they want what they're calling for is their stories to be told truthfully and authentically. And that is a completely legitimate concern to have, that when you have journalists who maybe come from, you know, privileged backgrounds who are able to take, you know, unpaid internship after unpaid internship because they always have a safety net, where people from other backgrounds and communities and neighborhoods aren't able to do that logistically, then you're missing those perspectives. And people, you know, learn things from their own experience, from their perspectives. And how does that also influence the way that they report the news as well? But I think that's absolutely a discussion worth having. And, you know, even today, throughout this entire week, seeing journalists put themselves at risk, put themselves on the line in order to tell stories for the communities that we care about, it still is a very important message to hear.
Sloan, thank you so much. I know you have to go. It sounds very busy outside. We're going to check back in with you later, okay?
All right. Thanks, Jordana.
Thanks, Sloan. She's right. This is the time to check ourselves, too. Are we talking about diversity enough? Are we having diverse voices on the air? I'm going to do better. We're going to do better. David and I have been looking to book very diverse voices. We want to hear, you know, if we haven't in the past, then that was our bad. That was our screw up. We should not have been doing that. We should have been more aware. And now we are definitely going to make a conscious effort. And I'm sorry that we haven't done in the past, but we're going to do better. We're going to get those voices out there. We're going to get those voices heard. When we return, Governor Walz should be the voice you are hearing. He is set to have a press conference at 5 o'clock, and you know we will carry it live here, as well as your weather, news, traffic, right here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.